The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Loud enough? A little bit louder? So let's see, is that getting louder? Is that loud enough now? When no one nods their heads, I wonder if... Okay, good. So, talk about generosity. There is a saying that if you can't meditate, be generous. That's quite a significant thing to say, kind of putting generosity as being maybe next best or equal to doing meditation. And there's certainly an intimate relationship between meditation and generosity. We see it in language like giving attention, to your breathing. It's very different than saying you're paying attention to your breath. I try not to say pay attention. I don't want it to be expensive. But you can give attention. And it is an act of generosity to use your awareness, your attention, and to attend to anything. If you attend to a friend, someone in distress, you attend to yourself, bring attention to yourself, it's a kind of food or kind of nourishment that supports us. And, you know, the meditation practice that we do, generally, has come down to us through people's generosity. So for me, I don't think I would have meditated except there were people who I encountered who, through their generosity, taught me to meditate. And I am eternally grateful for having that opportunity. But where did they learn what they had to teach? Because they meditated. But how did they learn to meditate? Because someone taught them. And where did those people learn to have something to teach? Because they meditated. And it goes back and back and back. So it's kind of like a chicken and egg thing. You know, where did it? Where does it begin? Does it begin with this warm-hearted generosity and care that someone offers something and teaches something? Or does it begin with someone meditating and then from that comes the impulse to give and support others? The generosity is considered to be really a fundamental aspect of Buddhist practice. And probably it could be said that there would be no Buddhist practice without the practice of generosity. If you go to Thailand or Burma, it's one of the great experiences to be in the Buddhist culture there, to experience the tremendous generosity of the people there. I was pretty blown away when I first went to practice in Thailand and experienced so much support and so much generosity coming my way. It was kind of represented one day in a kind of very little story, but the story, maybe because I was impressionable, I was meditating on retreat, I was young. I didn't have much experience with generosity in my life before that. I had ordinary stuff, but nothing that really stood out as being somehow touched me so much. So I went to Thailand to practice, and I meditated at a small monastery outside of Bangkok for 10 weeks. And when I showed up, the abbot gave me what's called a kuti, K-U-T-I, a little hut at the edge of the monastery that was built on stilts because it was kind of on top of the swamp. And in order to get to the steps of this kuti, there were all these planks of wood that kind of zigzagged across the marsh. And so if you walked on the planks, you wouldn't sink in. And those planks led to the little steps, three steps probably, that went up to a deck. And if you walk across the little deck and open the door, you come to this one-room hut that had enough space for a bed for me and enough space for the door, I guess, or something. It was pretty small. And I was to sit there and practice by myself. I was supposed to meditate every day. And I did walking meditation, and somehow in that swamp nearby, kind of really close, maybe 10 feet away, was someone's grave, I think. You know, it certainly looked like a grave. But it was kind of the only cement kind of square thing that was long anywhere nearby. So I did my walking meditation back and forth there. And that was my life for. And I was not the monk, but the monks of the monastery went out every morning for alms round. And the meaning they went out with a bowl, and they would walk the streets with a bowl with the lid off. And when the lid off, that means that they were available for if people wanted to make food offerings to them. And they would come back with these bowls full of food, and they would take it to the so-called kitchen, and their main kitchen job was to reorganize all the food that had been given that morning and make a big buffet table. And the one meal a day, the lunch meal, was made up of that food that they gathered. So the monks in the morning were out walking their alms around, and I was meditating. And one day, early in the morning, maybe after the monks had come back from their alms rounds, I just happened to finish my morning meditation. I opened my door, and my eyes went up across a little 3-foot deck or something, and at the top of the steps was a single apple. And then when I looked, my eyes went up further. Then on the fourth plank of wood, going back to the solid land, there was this monk who was leaving, you know, walking away. So he'd left that apple there for me. And so that was nice to receive an apple. I kind of appreciated it. But what struck me the most, and in my small mind and background, was that he wasn't staying long enough to get any thanks or to get any recognition. He was doing it without any need to be known as the person who was giving me the apple. And this act of kind of, I don't know if it was actually, maybe it was selfless, but this act of generosity where he wasn't trying to get anything in return. It seemed like it was just pure act of generosity. He just wanted to make this gift and didn't want anything from me in return. Was the kind of the lesson that I had, you know, I think it was halfway through my 10 weeks. So I was, my mind was pretty still and my heart was very open. And that just, wow, the example of a little gift like that. And that monk had been the recipient every day of people's generosity. He knew generosity. All the food that was available for him came from the generosity of the people around him. And sometimes these monks, especially not so much in Bangkok, but in rural Thailand, sometimes they don't get much food, and sometimes they have hungry days because the people are too poor. Or if they are given food, they're given a little bit of rice. And then if you're in Bangkok, you get a lot more, and sometimes there's an abundance. And then similar things happened in Burma when I was there, and there was just an outpouring of generosity. And it was very clear that the people who were generous there, the lay people, were being generous because they wanted to support me and the other people who are meditating in the monastery. They really wanted that's what they wanted to do, support us. And I had the feeling kind of that the whole country was of Burma supporting me meditating because of the amount of generosity. I was sitting one day, just, you know, very peacefully, minding my own business. Nothing was happening. I was completely still, very quiet and peaceful. And suddenly, I was sitting there, and a filling fell out of my tooth into my mouth. I hadn't moved. I don't know, maybe there was the temperature change or something. I don't know what happened. It just kind of dropped. And so I mentioned it to someone, and next thing I knew, a dentist came to see me. I didn't have to make an appointment. The dentist just came to take a look and tell me it's okay. There's still enough filling in there to protect the hole. And another time I was sick, and a doctor came from local medical hospital to take care of me. It was particularly touching. In Japan, also had the same experience of people. When I was there, I was a monk in Japan for a while. And there also, the monks would sometimes go on alms rounds. In Japan, they often gave people gave money. In Thailand, you're not allowed to give. Monks are not allowed to receive money. And I remember these old ladies who, I had the impression how they were extremely poor, would come and give just a few yen, just a little bit of money to give it. And so when I was in Burma, and especially when I was in Burma, part of what fueled my practice there I practiced for 8 months, intensive meditation. So all I did all day for 8 months was meditate, except sleep and eat. And but I was inspired to do it and sustain my inspiration, in part because I wanted to be worthy of those gifts. And I think that was a healthy sense of, healthy desire I had. I wanted to kind of live up to all what people are doing to support me and help me to go. And so these experiences were very powerful for me. And I began to appreciate how wonderful it is to be the recipient of generosity and inspired by the people who could be generous. And it inspired me to start being generous. And I discovered a number of things about generosity. Some of them I discovered myself, some of them I learned about from other people, and I saw that they applied to me as well. And I learned, for example, that generosity isn't always easy. It isn't easy to want to give. And I found that when I, sometimes especially when I kind of had an idea, oh, this would be a nice time to give, and I didn't want to, that turned out to be a wonderful time to take a good look at myself. What's going on in me? Am I afraid of giving? Am I being stingy? Am I attached to something? Am I closed somehow? What's happening with me when I don't want to give? And I learned a lot about myself and my what was getting in the way of that. And as I learned to notice those things, then it became easier to let go of them. It became easier to be wiser about giving and to really give when I felt like I wanted to give. And as I started giving more, I learned how to let go. And there was a kind of letting go, a giving up. And sometimes the things I wanted to give, I didn't want to give away. And, you know, I did something that was important for me. But when I saw how meaningful it was for the other person, and then I started saying, well, you know, this letting go thing is pretty good. And so sometimes I gave because I wanted to give. I always gave because I wanted to give. But sometimes the kind of primary motivation was really the gift to the person. But the other, sometimes it was because it felt so good to give. It was so good to let go of something I was holding on to feel the release of the heart, the release of my attachments, my fears in giving away. And I could feel this kind of palpable, physical releasing and opening sometimes as I give. And also giving is nourishing. If giving comes not from obligation, not from duty, not from fear, not for an exchange, but we give from the heart, it's nourishing, it's inspiring, it brings joy, it brings delight, it brings happiness. There was a king who was talking with the Buddha, and the king asks at some point, who should I give to? And the Buddha answered, and I'll give you some different translations, and then I'll tell you what the dictionary says. Give where you have joy. What gives you joy? So that's nice. I first heard this little saying. I heard it that way. And I thought, wow, give where there's joy. So that, again, not out of obligation, but that puts a different reference point for giving. If, you know, not so much because, you know, not a heavy, difficult, burdensome thing to do or an obligation to do, but am I supposed to feel joy in giving? Is that allowed? I thought I was just supposed to give because it was a duty. But to have this kind of delight and joy, be nourished by that. So that's one translation of this word, is to give out of... Another translation has been of what the Buddha said was, give where you have confidence. So give where you have confidence, it's a good place to give. So, you know, certainly you can give, you might give, you know, money to a scoundrel, and it probably won't give joy, make bring you joy, and you probably don't have much confidence that the person's going to maybe do with useful, helpful, beneficial things with the gift that you're given. And but anyway, we give where you have confidence. And what do we have confidence when we give? What kind of confidence? So that was interesting to live with that for a while and practice with that and ask myself the question, you know, what kind of, do I have confidence here? What does it mean to have confidence? And then if you look in the dictionary, the word that's being translated as joy and confidence literally means for the mind, what makes the mind bright, what makes the mind peaceful, calm, clear. Peaceful, calm, and clear. Isn't that pretty cool? At least the Buddha thinks that you can give gifts to people, be generous, and it creates a sense of clarity and calm in the mind. So this idea that generosity benefits the giver is one that's very common. In the people who are involved in karmic analysis, they say sometimes there's two kinds of Buddhism or two kind of approach to Buddhist practice. One is people who are mostly interested in creating good karma and the people who are interested in liberation. And the people who want karma will give to build up good karma. They get merit points, get karma points for better rebirth or something. And for people who want liberation, that's not really the concern about karma points. And there's a story, a folk tale of two people who had figured out, they thought, how to make a lot of good karma. They had a little pile of money, and each day one of them would give it to the other. They'd give it back and forth. You know, they're just making lots of good merit, lots of karma. And then, as the folk tale goes, they died and they got reborn as wells with poisoned water next to each other. So the wells would poison each other. So it wasn't really a good karma they created. They were kind of poisoning each other with a certain kind of greed and selfishness, and just kind of giving back and forth to themselves. So that, you know, there's karma side, but then there's the liberation side, and there, that's why the saying that if you can't meditate, be generous, that generosity can benefit the giver tremendously. And you know, as I've said, now you can learn about yourself, which we do in meditation. Sit down, meditate, and it's a fantastic process of self-understanding that comes up. People understand aspects of themselves that they haven't ever before. You can see depths of who we are. And so generosity also can be a great area of self-education. Meditation is a place where we learn to let go, because you let go of your thoughts, you let go of your preoccupations so you can be present. And so meditation has a lot to do with learning to let go. Sometimes we do the letting go, and sometimes we allow the letting go to happen. Meditation is also a place to feel the goodness of what happens when we let go. Generosity is a place where we learn the goodness of what it feels like to let go. The clarity that comes, the openness that comes, the joy that can arise, the confidence that can come from that. There's a lot of benefits that can come from generosity that are comparable to the benefits that come from meditating itself. But generosity does something for people that meditation usually doesn't do. And that is, generosity is usually interpersonal. It's something we do in relationship to other people or other beings or to the planet or something. And so generosity it involves a relationship between the giver and the receiver. And if it's often said that generosity is really the foundation of Buddhist practice. And what's nice about that, it puts the foundation of Buddhist practice in the relational world, how we relate to others, how we live together with other people. When in the West, when people come to Buddhism, they often start with meditation. And meditation, can even be selfish or self-concerned and just about me, myself, and mine. But if you start with generosity, then it's all about how you are in that relationship with other people and developing healthy relationships and discovering how to have healthy relationships that can happen in the relationship to the world around you. The Buddha once said that for the giver, he said something like this, that if the giver hates someone, if the giver gives gift to the hated, it reduces the hate. So if you feel ill will for someone, if you're really feel ill will or resentment, that's a time to give them a gift. You believe that? I've given that advice to people that it mostly has to do with in-laws and people. they're struggling with an in-law and it's going on for years sometimes, and I've suggested that they give the in-law a gift. Right, every time you go see, bring something small. Bake cookie, bake bread, a cake, a pie. Bring something. And a few of the times when I've given that advice, they've come back and said, that made a difference. That began to ease or open up or soften the in-law who had some kind of issue around. But it also can work for you. So if you feel some resentment, don't wait for them to give to you. Give to others. And unless you want to keep your resentment. Unless you think it's a good idea to have ill will, or you're stubborn, or you feel it's justified, then you don't have to give. But generally, it's hard to justify these things. And giving starts creating a healthy relationship. The people we have trouble with, if we give something, even if we give them a smile or give them our attention, ask how they are, it begins shifting the dynamics. I've done that a number of times where I've had difficulties with people, and I've made sure to go find them and be in their presence, walk up to them. And it clearly was a lot of tension, but ask them how they are. And the generosity on my part was not in terms of giving them something, but rather giving them some friendly contact where I wasn't trying to resolve the issues or challenge the issues. I was just trying to establish a little bit of a human contact with them. And I don't know how much, I can't tell you confidently how much it changed them, but it did change me. Because I learned that when I have some kind of resentment or ill will towards someone, it usually goes along with not having a clear, realistic idea of who the person is. I end up with a kind of like a caricature of the person. The particular thing they did, or it's not really realistic. But if I'm in their presence, then I get the full person again. And then it's harder for me to be hold on to my resentment or my ill will. But if I don't meet the person, then I'm living in this abbreviated, this partial view of who they are. And so to go towards the people we have these feelings towards and be friendly, be generous, can be a powerful way of helping us to overcome. It's helped me change my views about people. The times I've done this, it hasn't softened or resolved the differences, but it allowed me to enter into the conversations to resolve those with much more goodwill than if I just called them up on the phone or something. So I try to be with them in person. So generosity also helps establish healthy relationships. especially if you think about it, try to understand their relationships and see what's going on and see what's happening in there. The Buddha said that make offerings, make gifts. Making offering, making gifts, you should cleanse the mind in all ways. For the offerer, the offering helps abandon hatred. If people knew, as I know, the fruits of sharing gifts, they would not enjoy their use without sharing them. Even if it were their last bite, their last morsel of food, they would not enjoy its use without sharing it if there was someone else to share it with. It's kind of nice when I was in the Zen monasteries. Every meal that you eat in the meditation hall, you make a you're given this food in these bowls, and then you take a little piece of it and you put it aside so it can be gathered, and all the people's foods gets gathered together, and then it's taken someplace and offered someplace in the wilds for the fish or the animals or something. Because the idea is you always offer something back. You don't just take it for yourself and take it. And that was a powerful lesson in the Zen monasteries, this idea that, always you give. Always, even if it's just a little morsel. And even if one throws away the rinsing from a pot or a cup into the village pool or a pond, wishing that the living beings there may feed on them, even this would be a source of merit. Not to speak of giving a gift to human beings. So when you know when your food goes down the garbage disposal, because you don't have ponds in there to throw your food in, right? You know, you put your compost in, you know, your food in the compost, and to go off with Recology drives it away. I suppose the equivalent would be, well, as I send this off, where it's going to go, I hope that something, it benefits some being, some bacteria, some fungi, something. I hope it brings some benefit. It seems pretty petty to have that kind of thought. You know, why bother? You might want to bother if you suspect that the other things you're possibly thinking about when you turn on the garbage disposal or put your food in the compost is not as good. then stay with the good thoughts. But if you're just kind of like daydreaming and thinking about your resentments and thinking about how to keep more things for yourself, or think about how unfortunate you have to clean the dishes and you clean them too often, and wouldn't it be better if you just left a pile of dishes on the sink rather than to clean it all up? And I don't know what you think about, but if you have noble thoughts and wonderful thoughts all the time, don't bother with being generous as you throw your things in the garbage disposal. But what if you don't have anything better than that to think about? How does that condition you? How does that change you? How do you benefit from beginning to have opening your heart or opening your mind to a whole different perspective about how you're to live this life? I think this is a crucial question for many of us. I get the sense that I've been all over the world, lived in many countries, and there's something that's beautiful and wonderful about the people here that I encounter in the peninsula, and there's certain nice things that I appreciate a lot about people here. And I get the sense that there's a fair amount of selfishness here as well. People that, and you don't have to go too far into the business world, the technology world, to see a lot of selfishness, self-absorption and money and wealth and status and all kinds of things. That I think is a symptom of a certain kind of selfishness. And then it's contagious, you know, more things, more experiences, more things, all kinds of things. I want this, I want that. But to begin breaking the shell of selfishness through generosity, by beginning to create a mind stream, a thought, a habit, a conditioning of wanting to be generous and wanting to give and support this world and help this world and let the world begin with you and let it be a selfless world where generosity is at the forefront. How can I give? Every day, what can I do to give? So to give you, if you're interested in a generosity exercise, or maybe you can experiment with, or you know, or kind of see if you can look at all these things for yourself. Look at the resistance you have to giving. Look at what you're holding on to. Look at what it's like to give something away. See if you can give something to something and feel inspired and happy and good and calmer or more peaceful by it. Look and see if giving can do something you feel that helps others and maybe establishes a nice relationship with others. And here's the exercise. Take a $50 bill, keep it with you, waiting, looking for, some stranger that you can give it to. And see what happens to you. Not that person, nope, $50? You got to be kidding, that's a lot of money. You know, I could buy a lot of coffee. You know, I could have coffee every day for a few weeks. Or, you know, whatever. $50 may be big enough. Some of you, maybe it's not a big deal. So for you, it should be at least $100. And I've done that. Yeah, I've done that. Sometimes I've been given $100, $50, $100 in Dana, and you know, when I teach. And so sometimes I take that and I put it in my wallet, waiting. Sometimes I wait a long time. I forget it's there. But then something comes along. Oh, I meet someone who's doing something or inspired, and oh, here, okay, here. One of the first times that happened was many, many years ago when I went into San Quentin prison, and there was a Native American man who had been who I'd met there, and a beautiful man, and he came out a few years ago, I think, after he was there for 40 years, and but this was maybe close to 20 years ago now, and 15 years ago, and I was told by the people, the facilitator of this program I went to visit, that he was up for parole, but he really needed a lawyer to help him, and he had no money. And so I said, "Oh, I have $100 in my wallet," so I gave it to the facilitator because I couldn't give the money to him, and so that felt good. And it didn't seem to work. He spent another 15 years in the prison, but that felt good. It was a nice thing to do. And so, generosity. The joy of generosity. The task is to discover what that joy is for yourself. The task for Buddhists is to discover how you benefit from the generosity sometimes it may be even more than you benefit the person that you give to. To discover the tremendous benefit, self-benefit that can come from generosity, tremendous benefit when you learn to let go of your selfishness. So benefiting yourself by giving up selfishness. Is that a paradox? So, those are my thoughts. And we have, you know, a few minutes, 6 minutes or so. If you have any questions, concerns, worries, protests, or testimonials about generosity you'd like to share.
I work in downtown San Jose a few days a week, and on my way down there, I always put a 20 in my pocket, and I look for someone homeless, and I just give them enough to feed them for the day. And what I found is that it doesn't matter how deranged they seem to be. Usually when they realize that they're not going to be hungry, they come into this incredible presence and give me a blessing. And it's usually deeply religious and very warm. And sometimes it's the most intimate contact I have with someone all day. And I'm really sure that it's their moment of clarity. It's the most clear moment that they have also.
Nice.
Yeah, that's it.
I gave here at Sequoia Station, the shopping center nearby, I was going in with my young son to have get a burrito. And outside the burrito place, there was a man who was asked for some money. He said, you know, I'm hungry and I want some food, you know, I'd like some money for some food. And I said, oh, I'll buy you food. Just come with us and get the burrito. And so he went in and he ordered a burrito. I said, you can order more, I said. You know, whatever you want. No, that's enough. That's all you wanted was one burrito. You know, I wondered a little bit. If I offer him, you know, anything on the menu, is he going to go for the most and, you know, the most expensive? But he just wanted one burrito. And I offered him to come to eat with us. No, he said. And he left and went outside. And so my son and I went outside on the sidewalk. He was waiting for us. And he said, I'm a poet. And then, in return for you buying me lunch today, I want to read you one of my poems. And he pulled out a torn brown paper bag, pieces of a brown paper bag, a torn piece of paper, and where he had written this poem. And it was a beautiful poem. So the question was, who gave the biggest gift that day? Did I get? Was it me giving a burrito, or is he reading his poem to me? And I think it was me getting the poem. That was a beautiful little exchange. Any more?
Is the mic right next to you?
You push the button on the side, so it's green. Light comes on.
Hello. For me, I'm wondering how, for me, like, selfishness was imbued in culture and parents and childhood.
Can you get a little louder? I can hear.
And should I repeat that?
Yeah, please.
Okay, so for me, selfishness was imbued in culture and childhood. And it's just so common nowadays, like, in our society. And I'm wondering how we can kind of change that. And I know that one answer is be more generous, like myself. And I'm curious if there's, I guess this goes with the dichotomy between self and other, and like not wanting to impose on others, but also realizing change starts with myself. And yeah. I guess just your thoughts around that.
No, certainly change starts with yourself. So, you know, it's a deeply rooted thing, selfishness. So that's one of the functions of meditation, is to really get down to the roots of something like that and really understand it and somehow release it. So that's it. And then also, I think it's important not to make people feel like it's a crime to be selfish, because some of the sources of selfishness are feeling of inadequacy, feeling wrong, feeling bad, feeling, all, you know, it's easy to, and then you know, if you shame people, they feel even more kind of closed into themselves and protective and all that. So I don't know how to change a society, but I think that if you could show the people you know that there are better ways of living than not being selfish, give them high-quality experiences of one-on-one and in community, and take them for a walk in a park and show them that how much love and delight and joy there can be that doesn't require getting something, you know, or something kind of take them out of their selfish concerns. I don't know. I mean, it's a great question. You know. I hope that. You can come and be a manager at IMC, so that we have more programs and maybe make sure it's we have open here, and so more people can meditate and hopefully become less selfish. I don't know. It's a good question. So thank you very, very much. And whether you know it or not, you gave a gift to all the people who came today, the fact that you came here to meditate. Because many of us come here to meditate and to receive the support of others. And so you offered your presence, even if this is your first time meditating, was a support for other people to meditate here. And so thank you for your gift.